Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision that gave us abortion on demand, was decided on the premise that Roe, Jane Roe, had been raped, gang raped at that. That turns out to be totally false. She had not been raped at all, but in fact was impregnated by her boyfriend. But Roe, in fact, has since become anti-abortion. Meanwhile, here we are, 60 million abortions later, since that decision in 1973, and we have all this problem with abortion. Abortion and rape is our topic for this segment. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest was conceived in rape and is very happy that she was not aborted. Her name is Rebecca Kissling. That's spelled K-I-E-S-S-L-I-N-G. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. And go ahead and tell us your story, please.
Okay, thanks so much. And it's Rebecca Kissling, by the way.
Oh, how did I say it? I'm sorry. Kissling. Okay.
Yeah, Kissling. My story is that I was adopted, and I learned at 18 that I was conceived when my birth mother was abducted at knife point by a serial rapist. And even though she was really happy to meet me, she, when I asked her about abortion, she told me that if it had been legal in Michigan at the time, that she would have aborted me and that it should have been her choice. And she was pro-choice for the first 6 years that we met, and then she changed her mind. But she actually went to two back alley abortionists, and I was almost aborted. And the back alley conditions and the fact that it was illegal is what caused her to back out. And so she did not choose life for me. She really did choose abortion. And I owe my birth the law being there to protect me. And today my birth mother and I are both thankful that we were both spared from the horror of abortion.
Isn't that interesting? Obviously, you must be older than your picture, portrays you to be. But because Roe v. Wade, came into force January 22nd, 1973.
Yeah. And I was born exactly 3.5 years earlier, July 22nd, 1969. So I'm 46 years old. And thankfully, I've have aged well to some extent.
Now, if abortion were allowed only for rape or incest, it has often been said that would reduce the number by 98%. And there are many who are pro-life that say, let's at least get for the 98%. What are your thoughts?
No, that's a big mistake in strategy. First of all, I'm from Michigan, where we've never had a rape exception in a single law ever, because Right to Life of Michigan is a no exception, no compromise organization. And our pro-life legislators here are no exceptions, not because we have something different in the water here. It's because they were groomed that way and they were educated along the way. And when you set the bar higher, they will meet it. And now there's many states that have this same model: Alaska Right to Life, Georgia Right to Life, Nebraska, New Hampshire Right to Life, South Dakota, Colorado Right to Life. There's many good pro-life organizations that refuse to compromise. And so at the state level, they do much better than what's happening at the federal level. And sadly, there are some pro-life organizations who are more interested in protecting mediocre politicians than they are protecting the children conceived in rape. And it also just opens the door. Like you said, Jane Roe lied. And once you add a rape exception, as we saw last year with the Pain Capable bill in Congress, with Renee Elmers and the five Republican women, once you add a rape exception, now you have to get into the whole sticky situation of what is rape, what's a legitimate rape, and, you know, does she have to report it? And then women were all upset that you would have to report a rape because only 40% or 50% of women ever do report it. And so what are you saying? She's not really raped or she didn't report it? And it's just, you're getting into this whole ugly mess. And what ends up happening is the pro boards say, yeah, there should be no standards. All she has to do is say she's raped. Well, and that's what the bill ended up saying, that it just has to be, even the reporting requirement just said it had to be reported. It didn't say who had to report it. It didn't say it had to be done in person or it had to be done in writing. You could have the abortion clinic worker could have, quote, reported it, wink, wink. You know, so as soon as you have a rape exception, you're basically allowing abortion on demand for any reason.
I have known for... go ahead.
Well, and of course, whenever I hear, oh, save the 99 in exchange for the one, because rape is only 1%, and then the other hard case, you know, special needs, only 1%, you know, when I hear the 99 and the one, because that's what they usually say, that doesn't save any lives. You're not swaying anybody when you say, well, besides rape is only 1%. That actually causes more problems for pro-lifers, like with Aiken and others.
Yeah, I want your comments on Aiken in a moment.
Huh?
Go ahead. You finish your thought, and then I'm going to ask you about Todd Aiken.
Okay. Well, my thought is when I hear the 99 to 1, I can't help but think of the parable of the lost sheep, because Jesus was all about saving the one. In the parable of the lost sheep, he was actually talking about the little children. He said, see that you do not despise any of these little ones. I mean, what a strange thing to say, despise. Like, who would despise a little one? Well, you know what? In today's society, no one else is as despised as the child conceived in rape. We get called demon seed, evil seed, demon spawn, horrible reminder of the rape, monster's child, not what God created, and on and on.
Not what God created.
Child. I mean, I've heard all this.
Wow.
You know? And then Jesus said, see that you do not despise any of these little ones, for I tell you that their angels in heaven always look upon the face of my Father in heaven. And then he goes right into the parable of the lost sheep. And then he finishes the parable by saying, for your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should be lost. And so he wouldn't compromise. He's not willing that they should be lost. And we should not be willing either.
All right, we're talking right now with Rebecca Kiesling. That's spelled K-I-E-S-S-L-I-N-G. RebeccaKiesling.com is her website. Okay, Todd Aiken's name has come up. So I have known Todd Aiken for years, and he said to one of his persons that used to work for him, he said, man, he said, I worked so hard for 20 years, and then in 6 seconds, all I worked for was destroyed just in 6 seconds compared to, you know, more than 20 years. But comment about Todd Aiken and what, suppose you had been in his, he's a very decent man. He really is. He's still alive. But what are your comments about what he should have said and so forth? And I think, you know, the misreporting on him to some degree has, you know, taken some of what he said out of context.
Well, I mean, I know him personally, and he wrote about me in his book, and I spoke with him. I spoke at a fundraiser for him right after the comments were made, and he is a good and decent man, and unfortunately, he said what he said because he got it from a pro-life leader. It was in a book that he read. I mean, Todd Aiken was involved in the pro-life movement, you know, outside of abortion clinics for decades.
Yeah.
You know, here he was actually an activist, a grassroots activist, but he read this book, and the book said, you know, that a woman's body is a way of shutting down, it's only 1%. And what's really sad is that we have all these pro-life leaders, not just him, but several others, who have taken cues from the national pro-life leaders, and they've stumbled because of what the national pro-life leaders have said. The only reason why the rape exception got added in the pain-capable bill is because Trent Franks testified that it's only 1%. Well, why would he say it's only 1%? Well, it's because the national pro-life leaders have been saying it for four decades. That's been the primary response to the question of what about in cases of rape. The primary response has not been to defend. The primary response has been to diminish. And that's what Todd Aiken did. Instead of just defending, he diminished. And that's the big mistake. That should never happen. But
okay. So suppose you were Todd Aiken, or you were asked the question Todd Aiken was asked. How would you respond? So are you you're opposed to abortion, even in the case of rape? Rebecca, you respond to that question, please.
Well, I don't believe that we should be putting innocent children to death for someone else's crime. This is America where we don't do that. The Supreme Court said that there's no death penalty for rapists, that it's cruel and unusual punishment even for child molesters to get the death penalty. I certainly don't believe an innocent child should be put to death for his crime.
Okay, and do you think...
We actually have a five-state study that shows that that is the best messaging, that number one, you invoke the story of a woman who was conceived in rape or a woman who became pregnant by rape. And number two, and this is actually the best argument, is that you don't punish innocent people for someone else's crime. And that is what resonates people. And that's what actually changes hearts and minds and gets people thinking.
Okay, so the answer is, so when somebody says, well, you know, there should be abortions for rape, your comment is, don't punish the innocent on behalf of the, you know, the crime because of the guilt of someone else.
Yeah, and you can even ask the person if you're having a conversation, like, do you believe in the death penalty for rapists? You know, only 1% of rapists are ever convicted as charged. I mean, they only 1% even see jail time for rape.
Why? They just get away with it?
You're gonna give every child the death penalty? And most people are not for the death penalty, but if you ask them death penalty for rapists, you know, most people are going to say, no way, no death penalty for rapists. Oh, but you're going to give the death penalty for the innocent child?
Yeah.
And that makes people think.
Yeah. Good, good. I like that. All right, now, there, as far as the rape exception and incest exception on a political front, I can't help but think of the lifelong crusade of William Wilberforce against slavery in the British Empire, and he was able, in part, to accomplish what he did by doing it piecemeal. In other words, one step at a time. Okay, let's get this part passed first, and then later we can address the other issue and, you know, get the whole thing done.
And I believe in incremental legislation as long as it doesn't discriminate against another human being. Would you support legislation to end abortion except in cases of Muslim babies? Because they're only 1%. Or how about accepting cases of Asian babies? Can you imagine the national outcry? Because what does that say to every Asian living in America if we had a law that said that we banned all abortion except in cases of Asian babies? What message are you sending to every Asian person alive? You're saying that they're worthless.
Yeah. Okay, that's an excellent point. How many babies are there around that are basically the products of rape today, especially?
Well, we're 1% of the population. There is there's studies that show 32,000 rape-related pregnancies in the U.S. every year. And according to studies cited by Dr. David Reardon, who wrote the book Victims and Victors, he's from the Elliott Institute, and he does most of the research on post-abortion syndrome. Victims and Victors is all about pregnancies from sexual assault, and he cites two different studies, one that shows that 15% abort, and the other one says that 25% abort, which is actually half the rate of the average unplanned pregnancy. 25% choose adoption, whereas in your average unplanned pregnancy, only 1% choose adoption. So rape victims actually are 25 times more likely to choose adoption.
Wow.
They're choosing adoption instead of abortion because they don't want more violence. They've already suffered violence in their body, and they don't want more violence. And but people assume, so if you crunch the numbers, that's between 25,000 to 27,000 children conceived in rape born in the U.S. every year. And when you contrast that to the birth rate, that's 0.67% of children born every year. You know, rounded up, that's 1% of the population.
So in other words, Rebecca, there may be people we know around us that are products of rape and we didn't even realize it.
Yeah, and I know that you don't have, you know, you don't intend anything bad by this, but I really hate the term product of rape because it makes it sound like you're like a byproduct.
Conceived in rape.
Conceived in rape.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I've had pastors and priests correct me and say, you know, and tell me, I just want you to know a message from God, you were conceived in love. You were conceived in God's love. You weren't conceived in rape. It's like, and I know that. I understand that. You know, I know that God created me. He created me for a purpose. You know, that I was made in His image, created by Him for a purpose.
Sure.
Not to be aborted.
Right. And obviously the rapist did something which was terribly wrong. But in the meantime... Mm-hmm. You were conceived in rape, and God bless you. Rebecca Kiesling has been our guest. You know, I think there is one last question I've got to ask you. What was it that kept your mom from having the abortion that she wanted to have, even when she went into that back alley to seek one?
Sure. So the first one, it was an OB-GYN's office, and she had to go through the back door, which is pretty common, pretty typical. And just like Gosnell's, you know, House of Horrors, it was filthy. She said there was blood and dirt on the floor and on the table. And the back alley conditions, and because it was illegal, caused her to back out. And then she was to go to a more expensive one, and she was to meet someone at night by the Detroit Institute of Arts next to the Thinker statue. And someone would approach her, her name, blindfold her, put her in the back seat of a car, take her to abort me, blindfold her down and drop her back off. And she was told if she was further along than thought or any complications, they would have to keep her overnight. And she was afraid for her safety, but, you know, ready to go through with it. My aunt was going to drive her. And then she spoke with this doctor on the phone, and he called her stupid when she expressed concern. And then she said, "You're going to call me names, forget it." And then he went on to swear at her profusely. She hung up the phone. And then he called her back the next day to try to talk her into it again, you know, for $500 that he would take my life. And the same conversation took place. So I know, you know, where, when, the method, how much. I mean, all these details. There's the number one movie on Back Alley Network that's used in feminist studies all over the country. It's called Back Alley Detroit. I can actually watch the movie and see these men who were going to kill me. And, you know, this is my life-changing near-death experience. And I'm thankful my life was spared, but I was spared for a purpose.
Yeah.
And that is to go back and save others who are similarly situated.
Yeah. And you are fulfilling your purpose. Thank you so much for being with us. God bless you. Again, this has been Rebecca.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Rebecca Kiesling, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, Kiesling, KIESSLING.com. Yes.
And my organization is Save the One, SaveTheOne.com.
SaveTheOne.com. Okay, thank you, Rebecca. God bless you.